So while they're setting up, let's introduce Doug Pomeroy. Doug Pomeroy has more than 30 years' experience in both recording and mastering. He was a staff engineer at Columbia Records in New York City from 1969 to 1976, where he began working on reissues with producer Michael Brooks. He has also been a staff engineer at Cadman. Oh, far out. Have I worked on something that you worked on? I don't know. We got to talk. Staff engineer at Cadman Records, the Museum of Broadcasting, and Celebration Recording Studios. A longtime member of the AES, he has done work for the International Association of Jazz Record Collectors, the Institute of Jazz Studies, Florentine Films, and the Metropolitan Opera. He was the engineer designated by Boris Rose to transfer the Rose Collection of historic broadcast recordings. He continues to do studio recording with artists such as Vince Giordano, he of the Nighthawks fame, correct?
Yes.
And Marty Gross. He has engineered more than 200 reissues on many labels, including Mosaic, BMG, HEP, Bear Family, JSP, Baldwin Street, Vanguard, Columbia, Archaeophone, Decca Broadway, Ryko Disc, Vintage Jazz Classics, Rounder, and Arbors. We leave any out? His work has twice been nominated for a Grammy. Please welcome Doug Pomeroy.
Again, on the question of tape, which was mentioned earlier, anybody who does want to see the photograph I brought of the modification to my Ampex ATR-102 to allow playing of squealing tape without the squeal, I did bring that photograph. I won't describe what has to be done, but it actually took me a long, long time to figure it out after ordering many gallons of silicone from various suppliers. I realize now that I should have gone before Seth, because my subject is in many ways totally superseded by what Seth has just presented. But since it's too late to rewrite it, I'll go ahead anyway. The title, How to Play a Record, is intended with some humor. Let me just ask, how many people here transfer records for archival purposes? Oh, good, okay. Well, I hope you won't be insulted by what I'm going to say, because what I'm saying here is really intended for people who are not technical. So forgive me if a lot of this is very simple. I'm not going to discuss everything related to playing a record. Instead, I will expand on a talk I gave in 1995 at the ARSC conference in Kansas City. This time, I have prepared recorded examples, which I hope will make the subject clearer. My objective is to demonstrate the advantages of using a stereo cartridge for transferring mono records, and the importance of combining the left and right channels very carefully if and when a mono mix is made. That's it in a nutshell. You can leave now if you don't want to hear the rest. What are the reasons for playing a mono record with a stereo cartridge? If noise removal is going to be undertaken now or in the future, having the two phono cartridge outputs corresponding to the left and right walls of the record groove allows for some important digital editing opportunities in the computer. Sometimes the noise will be in a section of one channel only, so the corresponding section of the opposite channel can be copied and pasted over the noisy one. Or a brief noise in one channel only can be reduced greatly in level so that it will seem to disappear completely when a mono mix is made. Often one channel will have more noise than the other all the way through a recording, so having a stereo transfer allows processing to be applied only to the noisy channel, avoiding processing of the channel which doesn't need it. Now, if I can make this work. It's a short example of a recording with one noisy channel. Short but sweet. Of course, very often the record that characteristic won't obtain all the way through the record, so you have to do some fancy editing if you want to extract the least noisy track and patch it together. Or you, as I say, you might choose to extract the less noisy track as your mono program and simply eliminate the other one entirely. But obviously, none of these things can be done unless a stereo transfer is made of the mono recording. What happens when a lateral recording is played with a stereo cartridge? The left and right outputs should be exactly the same, since the recorded mono program is the same on both walls of the recorded groove, and this should cause only lateral motion of the playback stylus. Due to the design of all stereo cartridges, a mono mix of the left and right outputs cancels out, as Seth demonstrated, any stylus motion which is purely vertical. And there is always some vertical motion due to turntable rumble, both the original disc cutter's rumble and rumble of the playback turntable, as well as surface irregularities in shellac, defects in metal parts, and other things which we could go on all day. Also, there is invariably a vertical component to most forms of surface noise. And groove walls distorted by wear will frequently exhibit some vertical motion where the walls are worn away. Combining the left and right channels carefully will not completely eliminate all of these problems, but if done carefully, it can attenuate them significantly. Playing a mono record with the left and right outputs of a stereo cartridge may be viewed as having two versions of the same recording. As you all know, when combined, the common information, the sum, gets 6 dB louder, but the surface noise, because it is largely random, gets only 3 dB louder, so the overall improvement is about 3 dB. 6 minus 3 is 3. This is why we should tune the mono mix of the left and right carefully to achieve the best possible elimination of vertical modulation, which on a lateral recording is noise. Here is an example. Not a very good one, but...
You don't seem to understand the plot of this thing.
This is your stereo.
This man at one time was a politician. It was too dishonest for him, however, so he reformed and became a burglar. You don't seem to understand the plot of this thing. This man at one time was a politician. It was too dishonest for him, however, so he reformed and became a burglar.
It's at least, the mono is at least 3 dB less noisy, but of course it's still very noisy. If your phono preamp has a mono button, you might assume using it will perfectly cancel all of the nasty vertical noise. It will cancel most of the noise, but unfortunately most of the time it will not do so optimally. There are several reasons for this. And here are a few. The coils driving the cutting tools in various disc cutters in studios owned by various record companies using equipment made by various manufacturers were not all exactly the same. Nor were the cutting tools always absolutely perpendicular to the surface of the wax or lacquer, and all of these things affect the modulation of the left and right groove walls. We assume the original cutting tool was perpendicular, as it was supposed to be, and so we should make sure our playback stylus is perpendicular also. And the well-known method for doing this is putting a small thin mirror on the turntable and placing the tone arm down and looking at the reflection of the stylus to make sure that it is perpendicular. If it isn't, you need to rotate the cartridge on the axis of your arm. And if you don't have an arm that will do that, I think you should get one. Next, you should view the stylus from the side, which is what we would call the zenith. And again, playing a 78, we assume that it should be perpendicular. This is not the case, of course, with a stereo LP, where modern cartridge manufacturers recommend a stylus rake angle, a forward tilt of as much as 15 degrees. If you have several 78s all recorded in the same studio on the same day, then probably they will all exhibit the same left and right output levels. But a few days later, things will not be the same, I assure you. And if you go from one record company to another, you will see differences invariably. Furthermore, the coils in your phono cartridge are probably not perfectly matched. The gain settings of the two channels in your phono preamp are probably not perfectly matched either. Since we want to maximize the loudness of the lateral motion only, we need to find a way to adjust the playback levels with great accuracy so as to obtain a mono mix which has a maximum of the common lateral information. Rather than using a mono button, which imposes a fixed mixture of the left and right levels, it is better. It gives a better result if we can set up a mixing arrangement which allows the left and right levels to be adjusted independently until they are matched perfectly equally. Unfortunately, most phono preamps do not allow the two channel levels to be adjusted, and fewer still include a balance control which feeds a mono output. The KAB EQS Mark 12 preamp, with encouragement from yours truly, does include this feature in its controls. Yet most high-end preamps with a mono output, such as the Elberg, do not allow adjusting the channel levels which feed its mono output. The two groove walls of a mono record are, of course, not exactly the same due to the random nature of surface noise, as well as cartridge tracking errors and other factors. So there is some signal left over after we combine them and eliminate their common information. This is what we hear, as Seth again showed you, when we combine them in mono and listen to the difference between them. What we then do is tune them for the deepest null of the program while listening to the difference in mono. And when we found that null, we know we have set the levels of the two channels so that when combined normally in phase, the mono mix will maximize the level of the program and minimize the surface noise. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here, but forgive me. When are the left and right added together optimally? The very best way to determine this is to listen to the difference between them rather than the sum, since the difference in level between the two groove walls is quite small, and it's much easier for our ears to hear a small sound being adjusted slightly than it is a louder one being adjusted slightly. So we combine the channels out of phase and then adjust their relative levels, feeding a mono mixer until we hear the most complete null. This fine adjustment, by the way, requires continuous level or balance controls. A stepped attenuator obviously won't work. I've just mentioned sum and difference. What are these? Both are mono mixes. We call the sum for convenience left plus right, and the difference left minus right. In the first case, the channels are combined in phase, and in the other, they're combined out of phase. What is in phase? What is out of phase? I should mention that in the out-of-phase example, the only people who will hear this properly are those who are sitting equidistant between the loudspeakers. So a lot of you may not get some of these. But listen to this tone as it is. Not yet. I'm in phase, at least so far. Listen to this tone as it is presented first in phase, then out-of-phase several times. Whoop, went back. There we go.
500.
Out of phase, in phase, out of phase. This is a mono recording. Two tracks switching into phase and out of phase. Sorry. Really?
The rest of them are coming up as .movie files, and they're not open.
Okay, let's show that.
I have the one image up, though.
Okay. Can you show that?
Yep.
Oh. Okay, well, fortunately, they're not essential. I had several things here, and apparently only one of them will show, and it's what we just listened to.
It's in phase with surface noise.
Huh?
In phase with surface noise.
Oh, yes. I remember.
Okay.
But why don't we see it?
Oh,
it'll get there. It's a two-track mono. The only addition there is surface noise. And as you heard, if you don't get rid of the noise, the surface noise first, and you combine those two out of phase, they will eliminate each other. The only thing left over then would be those little squiggles there, which represent surface noise. what does the tuning of the difference sound like? Here's an example. This goes kind of quickly, but the first thing you'll hear is the program in stereo, in phase, then out of phase, then a mono mix. Excuse me. Then a mono mix of that out of phase stereo, and then you'll hear it being tuned for the null. Oops. Out of phase. All right, now we're listening in mono. And I'm adjusting the levels when I made this until I get to the point where I can't hear the music at all. Now we're in mono, in phase, and we have optimized the mono mix. Here's another example. This is in phase, mono, in phase stereo. This one goes on a little longer. Now we're out of phase. Now we're listening to the difference between the tracks, adjusting the levels to make the music completely disappear so far as possible. Then we know we've got them exactly matched in level. When we reach that point, we can switch back to normal in-phase mix. Like that. Disc mastering engineers know this method quite well. When a stereo tape arrives without any alignment tones, how does one adjust the level of the left and right channels? By ear or by eye, looking at VU meters? Lots of luck. The best way is to listen to the difference and adjust for the best null of the sound, which is common to the both channels, namely whatever was mixed in the center of the stereo tape recording. That is to say, whatever is equal in both channels, and invariably this will be the lead vocal and the bass. Once the channel levels are set, which produce the best null of the common information, normal phase is then restored and the stereo channels will be at the levels they were at when the tape was originally mixed. This does not work with all stereo recordings, but with 90% of them. And this is how karaoke records are mixed.
You must have known that I was lonely because you came to my rescue.
You must have known that I was lonely
because you came to my rescue.
This technique should also be used when playing a mono tape with a two-track playback head to assure the best possible quality of a mono mix of the tracks. And this is an extremely useful technique for adjusting playback head azimuth, playing a mono or stereo tape. When you have adjusted it, along with the level, for the best and deepest null, while monitoring the difference in mono, you will have found the most perfect setting of the playback head's azimuth. This is at least as accurate as an oscilloscope and a lot easier. The easiest way to monitor the difference between two signals as their levels are adjusted requires a balanced circuit, such as is found in virtually all professional recording equipment, including most digital converters. It's identified by an audio connector with three wires. Pin 1's ground, pins 2 and 3 carry the same signal in phase and out of phase. When you have two balanced lines, they can obviously be combined either in phase or out of phase. Reversing the phase of either one of them, it doesn't matter which, since left minus right is the same as right minus left, puts them out of phase with each other. Most phono preamps do not have balanced outputs, unfortunately, but But at some point, the signal will be balanced as long as professional equipment is being used. Most audio mixing consoles are balanced and include phase reversal switches which allow any channel to be reversed. There are also outboard amps which will convert unbalanced to balanced. And there are simple audio switches which can be placed anywhere in a balanced line, allowing the phase to be reversed. I have two of them in my suitcase, which I forgot to show. One is made by Shure, the other is made by Switchcraft. They're just simple little metal tubes with a switch. They change pins 2 and 3. And if your turntable has a vertical switch, that will do the job. If your equipment is entirely without balanced inputs and outputs, you still may be able to invert the phase of one channel using your computer software. The tuning of the mono mix may be put off until after the signal has been converted to digital form and recorded on a computer hard drive. However, some audio software will only allow left and right channels to be adjusted independently, and some won't. In any case, I find the best time to do the tuning is when the original transfer is being done. You don't need to actually to combine the channels, but it's good to listen to an equal mix of them before recording them uncombined so that when they are combined later on, they will produce an optimized mono mix. By the way, most digital audio workstations, if fed with a stereo signal and set to record mono, will actually record only the left channel. In that case, you have to record both channels and then execute a stereo to mono mix with the software, and your software may not allow you to reverse the phase of one channel or adjust the balance or hear it while mixing them in mono, which is essential. These are all reasons for getting the channel balance right at the time of making the analog transfer. It's important to make sure that the mono you are listening to is the same one that will eventually be recorded, and because on some equipment, and again, professionals would know the answer to this, but some people don't realize that the mono switch on some equipment only affects the loudspeakers, and that the mix that they are making at the outputs of the equipment is not the same because it's going through a different, it's not even affected by that switch. And that switch probably has resistors in it, which are probably not matched. So if you want a fine mono mix, you have to make sure you're listening to the machine you are mixing to. The best way to do, well, as I say, listen to the machine you're mixing to. It's useful to set up monitoring so that you can easily check on whether either of the channels is more noisy by itself or when combined with the other one. To do this, an easy way to do this is to install switches on your loudspeakers. You can get a switch at your local Radio Shack so that either speaker can be monitored while the mono mixer is switched in and out. For example, if you turn off your right speaker and just listen to the left speaker and switch your mono mixer off and on, what you will hear is first the left channel by itself and then the left and right channels combined in that same left speaker. This immediately answers the question that you were asking, you know. And if you cannot shut off your right speaker while doing this test, you won't be able to clearly hear the difference that you need to in order to make the determination. The tuning helps reduce to a minimum the surface noise which will remain in the final mono mix and also distortion which often accompanies loud passages. Listen to this distortion on one note, Sidney Bechet, presented twice before and after, and notice how it is reduced in the second case due to a well-tuned mono mix. How do you know you have chosen the best stylus for playing a particular record? Listening to the difference signal can help, since generally speaking, the best fit of a stylus in the groove will produce the best null in the difference mono mix. So along with tuning the mono mix to reduce surface noise, doing so also helps with stylus selection. Here's an example. That's a 3.0. It's a 2 mil. These determinations were made by listening to the difference mono, which I'm not playing for you. That's a 4.0. truncated conical. This is a 2.5. It's a 2 mil.
Well, you know I came.
That's a 3.5. Two mil.
I came, I just came to Jesus, just that I would give me a ride, I got a ride, tree of life, tree of life.
And insufficient tracking, vertical tracking force produces distortion, which is also easy to hear in the difference mix. And so here are two examples which were improved, well, not improved, but evaluated by listening to the difference. The first one is too light, and the second one is nice and heavy. This is 1.5 grams. Everything which has been said so far applies equally to vertical recordings, except that the null in that case is tuned using the left plus right rather than the left minus right. In that way, all purely lateral motion can be eliminated from the playback of a vertical record, and there is always some due to purely mechanical factors when a stereo cartridge is used. Here's an extreme example from a 14-inch Pathé. Oops. I don't think so. Okay, yeah, okay. I don't know where this went. Well, you get the idea. In closing, I'll skip the section I was going to read about Cedar's azimuth corrector, the box which has since been discontinued, and mention the Cambridge system, which has something called two-channel, what do they call it?
Two-channel.
Two-channel tools, yes, and which also automatically adjusts the level, which also changes as a record plays from the outside to the in, so that it is obviously a superior way of doing or trying to do what I've just demonstrated. And by the way, Eric Jacobs, I know he was here yesterday, but I don't see him now, has his WaveLab on his laptop and is happy to demonstrate matrix mixing, which is what this is called, for anybody who's interested. In conclusion, if you simply want to hear a mono record, go ahead and play it in stereo or use the mono button if you have one, and don't worry about fine-tuning the mix. But if you are making a preservation transfer or doing restoration work, I urge you to be concerned about the quality of the mono mix if and when one is made. Never forget that the initial transfer is the single most important step in all of audio preservation work. This cannot be overstressed. To state the obvious, information lost due to a poor transfer can never be retrieved, and noise not picked up at the time of the transfer will never have to be removed later on. If there are any questions. I'm sorry, that was so long.
Yeah, and we are just running 5 minutes over, and apparently there is another event coming into the room, so I hate to do this, but would it be okay if everybody who wants to ask Doug questions sort of gathers up here while we're wrapping up?
Okay.
Disassembling.
Okay.
And thank everybody for being part of the afternoon technical session here.